There we go, recording. Thank you so much. Well done. Someone was on the ball. Thank you. Yes, welcome to webinar number two of our webinar series. And today, Peter is going to review modules 3, 4, and 5. But of course, any questions that you have from anything that you've studied so far is welcome. So please start putting your questions in the chat. Those of you that submitted your questions to MeWe in the group in the week, thank you so much. I have them listed, so you don't need to repeat those because I will call those out towards the end of today's session. And I do believe that Peter is going to be talking in more detail about how to discreate the more troublesome issues in our lives. I'm keen to hear this, definitely. I don't think this is something that I've heard him discuss before. Keep using the chat. Any comments, any questions, anything that pops up from the conversation today, pop those in. Anything that suddenly your memory is triggered about something you've read in the manual, put those in. Everything is welcome. And don't be afraid to ask any type of question because if you're thinking it, someone else might be thinking it as well. But before you think it, welcome it. Yeah, we've got to get used to this welcome stuff. Yeah, great. I love learning, like the first webinar, and then reading and learning. Yeah, good. So as I say, pop your questions in. I think that's it, isn't it? Modules 3, 4, and 5, plus one and two if you needed. Off we go. Over to you, Peter. Thank you so much.
Hello, everybody. So, in this process of disc creation, what makes it complicated is how many layers there are. And I want to talk about a few points that make it complicated. And one of those is how we handle the unknown. So quite often when you're trying to get to the root of something, you start forming conclusions. This must be my karma, or I must have done something terrible in my past life. You have all kinds of ready-made answers, even though you don't know. This then complicates you actually getting to the real root of the problem, because you've got all these ready-made answers in there. So naturally, these are going to come up in the process. So when you start to expand into a problem, before you even try and figure out what it is, you start welcoming emotion, you're going to have layers of unknown. Each of these unknowns is probably going to have within it a conclusion about the unknown. So what will happen then is that if you start your process and you have this ready-made answer come up, like, it must be my karma, just welcome that and realize it's just a conclusion about the unknown. When you've gone that through that, you'll get back to the point, I don't know. Just realize I don't know is also a creation. It's okay to create not knowing. So what's going to happen then when you start expanding? You reach points of unknown. There are certain emotions you're going through. You start feeling a memory, you start feeling your anger, you start feeling your sadness, your fear, whatever. And you get to a point, well, I don't know what's next. And then you have all these conclusions about it. So you welcome those conclusions and just simply welcome, I don't know. Now, because we have layers, each known is bordered by an unknown. That's how creation works. So this can come up several times. You go through many layers, suddenly, I don't know. You welcome not knowing, and suddenly something else comes up. And you carry on your process, more emotions come up. Then you get to another unknown, I don't know what this is. You welcome that one too, and something else will come up. That's the thing, as long as you keep welcoming everything, you keep moving. It doesn't have to get stuck unless you stop welcoming. That's a problem. People tend to try and intellectualize too much, trying to figure it all out. But actually, I guess I keep telling people, you don't have to know it all. You don't have to figure it out. How creation works is actually very simple. We can make it very complicated, but actually we don't have to figure it out. We simply carry on the process, welcoming. So if all the confusion, all the not knowing, all the wish you did know, these are all more emotional layers. Basically, if you have a problem in your life, first thing you do is start welcoming the emotion about that. You put yourself into it, really feel it, experience all the situations around this, all the memories of all the times it's happened. You put yourself in whatever the situation is, you feel all the emotions. And you'll have various emotions. There may be frustrations, there'll be, I don't know why this is happening, what's my karma, and all these things, all these unknowns. Just more emotional layers. So you welcome not knowing. There's a bit of a blankness which goes to the emptiness and the apathy. When you welcome not knowing, you'll get to something else. Now, what makes the problem most stubborn is when underneath all these layers, you get to a dual creation. In other words, you're creating something against something else. And this is surprising how often we do this, even though it creates the biggest problems. When people make affirmations, for instance, about creating the negative, you have two opposing creations. So for instance, if I had the feeling of being weak as a child and I decided I was going to be strong, that need to be strongest based on feeling weak. The two will always be there together. I have a dual creation at the bottom. I'm weak, I'm strong. What will happen then is every time I'm being strong, weakness will show up again. This way you keep having going on. You're focusing one half of duality, the other one turns up, because you cannot discreate only half of it. You have to look at the whole. And so when these things show up, it's almost like it's like the emergency lighting that comes on when the power fails. You think something's gone and suddenly the other half is putting it back again. The thing that you're resisting is always turning up again. This is where you have persistent problems. This is why they happen again, because you're resisting one half of a duality. So what will happen then with some of these creations, when you have to go through these layers and you get back to the very root of it, there's a duality going on. Could be weak, whatever it is, that's a common one. What do you do, experience both at once? See, when you expand problem, you first feel that you expand to get to the edge of a creation, you see the whole. You realize I'm experiencing a dual creation. To be strong. We need to create the whole. Well, you're not weak anymore and you don't need to be strong. You can be strong if you want to, but it's no longer that need. You see, the duality has to go. The need to be strong based on weakness will keep making the weakness come back. This is how we have persistent problems. These are the ones that people go over again and again and again, and they keep coming back. Just so I said earlier in the course as well, that sometimes there are these patterns which are very stubborn, you know, and you have to keep going through layers. Well, this is what the layers look like. First of all, they're the layers of an unknown, so we make conclusions about the unknown. And finally, we can get to a dual creation. These are the most persistent problems. Once you know how to do that, there's nothing you can't discreate. The thing to remember is to keep welcoming every emotion. Even the frustration, not knowing, you don't have to know, it's okay. You welcome not knowing, you welcome the frustration, welcome the confusion, welcome the overwhelm. These are all more emotions. Welcome wishing you knew. Even the things, why is it happening to me, or these kind of ready-made answers, which are actually emotional in nature, if you look at it. So quite often the questions we ask, like when you're asking why is this happening to me, because you're in victim mode, you have to welcome the pity and the grief. There's no point actually trying to answer the question. But usually when you've gone through the emotion, you realize that question isn't even relevant anymore. You don't need it. You realize the reason why it's happening is because it's created it. That's simple. You see, pure awareness can play any game without judgment. What we're experiencing now is not because it's bad karma, because we've been bad or anything like that, or the karmic return from harming somebody else or any of those things. It's simply because pure awareness plays any game without judgment. When we first come into this creation as pure awareness, we want to experience our creation. At that point, we haven't made any judgments. We simply experience things. We create things, we experience them. And actually, to experience something fully, you often experience it to breaking point. Very simple exercise you can do to explore how this works, and I don't know if you can do it right now, but can try it later when you get a stick. Go pick up a stick or something, and what you do an exercise called walking, where you become the object. You put yourself into this stick as if it's you. You can feel its boundaries as yours, like you're long and thin, you can feel where you're being held. What you're going to do then, bend it until it snaps. Then you'll feel what it's like to break. That's only how far this stick goes before it breaks, what's the limit of its experience. And the secret of healing is simply realizing the stick isn't you. What broke wasn't you. Pure awareness can't break. You have identities, you have concepts of yourself, you have a mind and emotions, these are all your creation. They can break. But when you realize what broke wasn't me, it's healed. So it's good to do this experiment, to actually rock the stick and break it to feel what it's like to break. Just to remind you of times you felt broken. And just as you withdraw from the stick and realize it's not me, we withdraw from the situation of being broken and realize it's just a feeling. What broke was my creation, not me. When you can welcome that and let it go, you realize you're not broken. You can release that memory, discreate that situation of all the weaknesses and its problems, and create what you want. Pure awareness cannot be broken, but it experiences everything without judgment. So rather than look for all these reasons as why we are suffering and all these things, just realize is simply because pure awareness plays any game without judgment. I remember there was a, I think it was in The Magnificent Seven, they asked the cowboys why he had done what he did, you know, going up against the bandits. He said something like, well, the same reason why the man jumped into the cactus. It seemed like a good idea at the time. And that's what we do. You know, we create a situation to experience it. It was a good idea at the time. We didn't know what pain was. We didn't know what suffering was. We didn't have any preferences yet. Now we've experienced it, we don't like it. So fine, we learn, we won't create that again. But once you're actually resisting a situation and not getting to the end of it, it doesn't go away. Because you have to finish the experience before you can discreate. So this is another important point, which is why we don't discreate things. We're not willing to experience. Again, it comes from not being identified with a thing. The experience here is not you. You're pure awareness. You work on the feeling. What is happening there isn't you, it's just a feeling. As you work on those feelings and complete the experience, it all passes, and then the situation can discreate. And by the time we've got to where we are now, we've created so many layers here that we've got so many complex situations. You have a problem in your life, and there's as many layers to it as how you're creating it, and all the unknowns and the conclusions about the unknown, and maybe possible duality at the bottom. So it might take you a while to discreate it. Once you know how, it doesn't have to take that long. When you go through your process of discreation, you realize some of them take time, some are very quick. Depends on how much emotion there is. And in the end, you don't mind spending a bit of time on it. You just do the process. So even with really complex situations, there's just more layers. You work on layer after layer after layer till you get right to the end, when you can see the whole thing as the observer, not being identified. When you realize this is not me, this is my creation. So you can see then, might be already recognized in this of some of the traps you get stuck in trying to discreate certain things, certain emotions you go through. I don't know why this is happening, you know, and that kind of thing, why things keep coming back. So just remember those points. It might be a bigger clarity to your situation now. If there's something you haven't been able to discreate and you got stuck, these are the reasons. Keep welcoming. Don't worry about figuring it out. Welcome not knowing. Remember the conclusion about the unknown. Until you go through layer after layer of emotion, you will reach a point where you get to the edge of that creation. It's natural that everything has an edge. Sometimes there are other edges with unknowns in between. And if the situation hasn't completed yet, then you can feel it. There's still an unknown. I don't know what's next. That's okay. That's a layer two. You know you've got to the edge when there isn't that anymore. There isn't a sense of I don't know. You simply see the whole thing with all its unknowns. There's a whole creation. I've been creating this all my life. This is how I've been feeling about it. This is my belief. And there it all is. I can then let it all go. Okay, should we have some questions now?
Yeah, great. I'm actually welcoming the frustration that I'm feeling right now as you're explaining. It's like, I don't understand.
Ah, so we see, as I said, that's a layer. Yeah. You don't have to understand, you just have to do it.
Yeah, but how? How do you do it?
It would be difficult at first because you've never done them before.
Exactly,
yeah. Something to realise is that a lot of this is hard because you haven't done it before.
Yes.
First time I say it, it's like it goes everywhere.
Yes.
You listen to it again, you try it out, and then suddenly it's familiar. Oh, it's simply a process. Easy when you look at it. Keep welcoming. There's nothing easier, really.
Yeah.
But look at the complexity we put in place, you know, instead of actually, you get to a point where you stop welcoming. That's what the problem is. Welcome the frustration. Welcome the unknown. You know, our frustration's okay, too. That's also a creation.
Yeah.
And it's also about judgment about yourself, you know.
Yeah.
You have frustration because you think you should be doing better. You think you should know better. Well, you don't. You're still God.
Yeah.
You can create being clever. You can create being stupid. You can create being very wise. You can create not understanding anything. It's still your creation. When you recognize that and you come back to being God, you can do anything. You can let go of the lack of understanding, because that's just an emotion too, really. Then suddenly you understand. You won't understand by trying. The frustration is an emotion. So you welcome that until it passes. Yeah. And you realize there's no need to be frustrated because you're only frustrated because you're trying to do something that you think you should be doing. But actually, all you have to do is welcome.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty simple when you look at it, isn't it? So you're going through a process and you don't get anywhere, you feel frustrated, you welcome that.
Yeah. No, and it's got to a point now where I laugh at my frustration. Like, I feel it. I go, oh, here we go again. And I laugh at it. I'm like, okay, here it is.
That's another one you see.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's another layer you see. When you get to the here we go again, you realize this is a persistent problem, not just once.
Yeah. The frustration
you
I'm talking about.
Here we go again. You know, you've done this many times.
Yeah.
Go to deeper. Yeah, exactly. So what's going to happen then? It's not just one frustration. You get you go through layers. You realize you've been frustrated many times.
Yes.
But you've gone through all of it. You get to the end, release the whole thing. You'll never be frustrated again.
I look forward to the day.
It's a big pattern. It's not just now. It's something that's happened many times.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, first of all, welcome it.
Yeah.
Welcome being continuously frustrated all your life.
Yeah.
And you get right to the end of the whole thing.
Yeah. And I'll never forget one thing that you... Go ahead, Peter. Sorry, go ahead.
There's something in some of the questions here. Somebody's asking if we can do this great. Why do we need point holding? Point holding brings things up, which you might not be aware of. You see, you can use this question in any situation in your life, but quite often when you start to heal, you've got physical problems and there's so much numbing out. You need some help in bringing it out. You know, when you first feel numb, you know, and then you start trying to welcome on your own, you might just feel numb for a long time. Yes, you can work through it. Trouble is, when it can take time, and you might give into the frustration before you actually work through it. Pressing a point comes up more intensely and faster. We do point old next, you want to do it quicker. You might, when you start this work, you realize actually there's lots of things you want to discreate. But we do point holding. We're going to get it all out fast, clear the way so you can actually get on with creating what you want.
Oh, yes. And we have a question here from...
Somebody's asking about the ideal creation and the short term. Yep. Which one?
Yep, same one. We're on a delay. Yeah, go on. You go.
Okay. So the ideal creation. It's very useful to actually align your short-term, long-term, and ideal goals. You see, if you only have short-term goals, and when you finish those, you don't know what's next. You have to scratch your head, think, what do I want now? But actually, they should be aligned. You see, there's some things you have ideals about. You really want to go in the end, you know, maybe not even in this lifetime. Short-term goals are like stepping stones for those. I've achieved this, now I can achieve the next step. Goals are like a long-term goal, then it's far more powerful because each success is taking you close to that big goal. So it's good. Personal ideal goal is the ultimate of what you find in this. If there are no short, long-term goals, that becomes frustration. Focusing on something that you can't have, so you don't want to get anywhere. But if it becomes like the way to the long-term goals, it becomes really useful. There's no point in focusing on...
Okay, Peter, I'm going to interrupt you. Peter, I'm going to interrupt you. Can you turn off your video because your bandwidth is really low and you keep cutting in and out and we didn't hear your response to the question. So if you turn off your video, then it will give you more juice.
Okay.
Oh, look at that. What a wonderful face. Thank you so much. Answer that question from the beginning again, please. Thank you.
All day, a couple of years ago, that one. Okay, so let's go back to that then, that in the goals, you have short-term, long-term, and ideal. And I'm also going to add something else at this point, something we can call optimal futures. What makes the future optimal? What gives it more power to draw you forwards? Several things. It has feedback, it has choice, it has challenge. You see, if you have a future where there's no more challenge, it gets a bit dry, there's no power in it. We always have new challenges because we're always expanding. And then there's continuation. You know, that each time you come to a place of challenge, there's also choices to make. You know, if you just think, I want this now, there's no more choice, it doesn't work that way, that's not alive. The optimal future will contain more choice, more continuation, more challenge, more feedback, so you can always make new choices and expand further and further and further. If those things are included in futures, there's far more power in that future. So we look at that the ideal way as well. When you really get to the peak of your power and everything you want, it doesn't really stop, does it? How are you going to stretch those even further? What's your next challenge? How are you going to become more? You find there's certain strengths you're developing. It's different from each person. Whatever your skills are, you can still develop those more and more and more. You might develop new skills as well, but there's a continuous expansion. Therefore, with that, there's more choices, there's more challenges. So when you plan your futures, bring those in. Challenge is fun. It's not the same as something that grinds you down. Struggle grinds you down. Challenge makes you more. That's the difference. You don't see yourself struggling, but you see yourself having challenges that stretch you. And every time you make that challenge and achieve something, you feel great. You feel more expanded, and therefore you feel even better, more positive, more joyous because of those breakthroughs. So these things you'd be brought into the future as well. So you're actually becoming a very positive, powerful person who's always creating. If you've got those in mind for your optimal future and for your ideal goals, they've stopped affecting you now because you're creating a double quantum wave you see from the future. Therefore, the shorter term goals become easier. There's something further pulling you forward, which pulls you through those short term goals quickly. If you don't have short term goals, you might give up after a while. If you've been visualizing something for years and it hasn't happened yet, you might give up. Which is why we want short term goals too. So you want short-term, long-term, ideal goals, and optimal futures. Okay?
With regards to just creating and goals, we had one submitted on the MeWe, and it says, relative to disc creating and also visualizing my new goals, I have so many interrelated issues that started when I was very young. How do we know where to start when it comes to dealing with everyone at the root and also visualizing new things? I realize I've been much too idealistic on my goals, where the world would have to be full of embodied fifth dimensioned people. Is that a form of stalling my healing? It has just ended up reinforcing my issues with trust and faith. How do we figure out what smaller steps must make sense, especially if we need financial breakthroughs for survival needs, for example?
First within this, you look at why you need to change other people. You see, quite often they're pressing buttons in you because you're not welcoming your own emotions. When you're really going through your own process, there's no more judgment. Everybody, whatever they're doing, whoever they are, is perfectly okay. They have their own experience, so they create their own reality. But when they're pressing buttons, it's because you've got emotions that are being triggered. So don't get caught up in the judgment. Just welcome the feeling, and as you release that and grow, you won't have judgments about other people anymore because you're dealing with your own stuff. But you don't need to change other people and change the world. Yes, you want to create the world that suits you in the end, but you don't have to worry about every small detail. People are not going to bother you anymore because you're not judging them. There's no point in trying to create a perfect world out there when you hold in on judgment, so it doesn't work. It's the judgments all around that are creating problems. Everybody's judging everybody else, and everybody wants everybody to do what they're doing, wants you to think the same, and so on. No, it doesn't work that way. You create your reality, and your shadow is going to be reflected from the outside all the time. People are pressing your buttons. That's part of the process. They're helping you because they're showing you where those hidden feelings are. So you welcome everything that people are making you feel. So rather than judge it, just welcome it. When you release that emotion, they won't bother you anymore. You can allow them to be exactly what they are. So that's the first thing to recognize, where your judgment is. When you can actually welcome the emotion, the judgment goes. Then the world is perfect. See, when you really look, it is perfect because it's always helping you. It's always showing you where your resistance is. Is how your shadow works. You can shut away and hide from all the people you don't like, but actually, sooner or later, somebody's going to come press those buttons again. It has to come up somewhere. So when you start welcoming things and changing everything, that's how you go through life elegantly.
Just like me. I'm not sure, sorry, because I'm busy typing and reading, I don't follow everything you're saying. So forgive me if this question has already been answered. But from Nick, I keep focusing on my ideal creation and are having issues creating a shorter term creation, which would be more achievable.
That's a case of just thinking about it, really. Yes, that's why we make these lists of things you enjoy. The idea, sometimes when you have a big ideal and don't see the short steps, it's because there's still too much judgment. You know, you want everything to be perfect. The need for perfection is something also we need to release. See, perfection isn't a standard that's really in life. You know, there's no one standard that everything conforms to. There's no perfection. Everybody's individual, and you're perfect in that uniqueness. So when we're trying to make something perfect, it takes all our attention. And that's why we need to go to our judgments instead. Because when you stop being so ideal, which means letting go of judgments, you can get on with enjoying your present steps. And that's where we come to a list of what we enjoy. What you're creating as your short-term steps are the life that you enjoy. Surely that's what you want first, isn't it? You won't be happy in your life. So think about things you enjoy. Another problem that gets in the way is that sometimes we don't feel the right to our simple joys. We think we've got to create this wonderful ideal out there, and somehow our little joys are unworthy. Well, no, you're here to have fun. This is your creation. So actually observe any feelings around not being worthy or undeserving of having that fun, or that somehow this goal isn't noble enough. This is a very important one to look at, actually. It's very common when you look at it. A lot of people, when they're trying to plan their goals and pray and so on, they're always trying to make something noble out of it. It's going to be for the good of the world, and it's very noble and everything. It's like, you know, it's like when you want to manifest money. What do you want it for? Some people say, oh, I can change the world, make these wonderful things happen. No, maybe I just want to pay my bills and have fun, relax, go on holiday. Nothing wrong with that. It's not as if there's a God judging you and only gives the money to someone with the best reason. It doesn't work that way. Your desire has to be honest, intense, and at peace. So you have to be at peace with the desire. There's no greater being judging you. You are God. If you think your reason isn't good enough, you're going to block yourself. You need to go into these judgments, you know. You can just have fun. And actually, these things are not separate from your bigger goals. Because as I said, the real fun comes in the challenge. As you expand more into your skills, you are changing the world. This is how the short-term and the long-term and ideal goals get aligned. What I'm doing now, which is ultimately going to be taken towards that long-term goal, is expanding me now, making me more, and I'm having fun. So sometimes, when you're looking at the long-term goal and you want to form some short-term goals, start by what it's like to have fun. What are things that fun for you? And look at any resistance to having fun, any judgment, any unworthiness, any feelings of not deserving, or that this isn't a big enough, noble enough reason. That's the thing. There really is nobody judging you these reasons. You don't have to have a good reason to create something. You have to be at peace with the reason. If your intention is honest, you know, that means it's that you know why you want it. You're not making up a bigger reasons because you don't think your reason's good enough. If you want this money, for instance, so I can have a fun holiday and lay around and, you know, enjoy lots of food and whatever, and I don't feel good with that, I might say, oh no, I need this money for a bigger noble reason because I'm going to change the world and grow spiritually and all that. If it's not honest, it isn't going to work. It has to be real. If we really want the money just to have some fun and go on holiday, that's okay. If it's honest, it works. Honest, intense, and at peace. You're at peace with your reason. You are okay with it.
Great, thank you very much. There's a couple of people enjoying the honest, intense, and at peace with our goals. Yeah definitely. It makes everything so much more exciting and
it's all this judgment stuff, you know, you have to have a struggle in your life and be deserving and something really noble. No, we're here to have fun, first of all.
Yeah. Wonderful. Okay, so we do have many questions coming in on the chat that are slightly unrelated, so that's not a problem. I'm just saying that we're done with the related questions. So what I'm going to do now is, and everybody still keep putting your questions in the chat, it's not a problem. What I'd like to do, Peter, is to direct you over to the questions that were submitted into the MeWe group this week. So I'll read those out first, if that's okay. And then we will go back over to the chat questions. All right. So, and forgive me, I don't know who asked what. I'm just going to read them out in order. Question number one, Peter. I'm irritated in my dreams now. It's not anger, but irritation. How do I get rid of this? When you meditate after the Chandali mantras, etc., how should I sit? Oh, I think that's a separate question. Sorry. Let's go to the dreams first, shall we?
Well, same answer as before. Welcome it.
Okay.
You see, when you're in your dreams, all the emotions that you haven't come up and dealt with in the day come up in your dreams. That's just when you release the emotions. So when you wake up and there's this kind of irritation there, welcome it. Now, quite often the dream is a clue to where the irritation is coming from. The best way to work with dreams is to separate the imagery from the feeling. So the feeling is real, the imagery is symbolic. So what you see in the dream isn't directly related to what is directly related, but symbolic. It's not exactly what's happening, but it'll be a symbol for something. If you interpret the symbolism of that dream, it'll tell you what you're looking at here, whereas the emotion is real. So if you simply go into the irritation and then let the dream speak to you, you'll remember what you're irritated with. Something has been irritated you before, it's been pushed inside, and it's coming up in dream. So welcome it. And essentially, it's like, if you don't know why it's there, fine, welcome the unknown. This is how you go through the layers. You welcome the irritation, welcome not knowing why it's there. And soon later, you get to the point where you do know why it's there. You remember what irritated you, something you haven't kind of finished dealing with. Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much. Going back, when you meditate after chanting Dali mantras, etc., how should I sit? What should I be thinking about or not? And can I use this time to discreate?
Yes, you can. What will happen? You see, you don't have to maintain the mantra all the time. When you start your practice, you see, you might use the mantra the first minute, or even half a minute, and it'll set the energy going. Then when you start welcoming, it's flowing there. Once you start, it continues. So you set off the chandali and then just get on with your process. You can just meditate, or if it starts bringing stuff up, you go through it. It's good to observe, you see. In most meditations, it's something people are not often told, but in meditation, you're supposed to observe the effect of what you're doing. Even with any mantra, when you're just repeating a mantra, if you observe the effect of that mantra, it works far more. If it's relaxing you or expanding, whatever, if you're observing that, you go with it far more. Same way with the chandali, if you start to observe emotions, as you focus on them, you observe them, you expand into them. It's how meditation works. It does require what you're doing.
Thank you. Okay. Moving on to the next question. Yeah, when working with choices and the forbidden zone, do we need to remember the exact choices we made and assess the specific memories, or is it enough to just feel the emotions?
It's more complete if you remembered when you made the choice. You see, there are stages to making these big choices. The first thing you want to feel is the need to make a choice. And it's almost the atmosphere in which the choice is made. So the stages, you know, in the emotion, there's an atmosphere. You're in a situation where, put in a situation where you've got to make a choice for some reason, whether it's for survival, to escape from something, to numb something, whatever it is. You first feel why you had to make a choice. So there will be a level of memory. It might not be exact memory, or you might remember exactly when, but you remember the emotion. You remember the situation. Remember being in a situation where you have to make a choice. That's the point where it becomes really powerful. When you remember you had to make a choice, you remember why you made the choice. That's where you want to get to. So the memory might not be complete in physical terms, but you will certainly remember the emotion. You remember the situation you were in. This is what you need to feel in that forbidden zone, the atmosphere in which you made the choice.
Sorry, I didn't realize I was muted, and then my microphone told me. Okay, next question. My deepest gratitude for mentioning Ophiel earlier. I only knew or read your books, but now I've got two of his, and they are awesome. Any specific piece of advice about his books and methodology?
Okay. Ophiel was actually one of my first teachers when I was back in college. I was about 19. I started reading his books. Now, obviously, he's dead by now. If he isn't, he'll be well in his hundreds. But he used to invite people to actually write to him and give him further lessons. Now, I found him actually very practical. He was almost the opposite of me, because I was like five planets in Cancer. He was like a tripled Capricorn. So he was, you know, he brought the balance of stability there. He was very practical. This either works or it doesn't, you know. If it doesn't work, that's what he's concerned with. He's not concerned whether this is good or bad or wrong. Does it work? Very practical. And sometimes you find even repeating many things again and again in different angles. And this works, because sometimes you have to get to another angle to really understand it. Just the way I teach you, there's many simple things here, but you might have to approach it with a different angle to get it. so outside normal thinking. All his books point to the same basic principles here, but I found The Art of Practical Astral Projection was one of the most practical I'd worked with. Working with that book, you know, and I mastered astral projection in about 5 months, nothing else was working. He gave four different methods, and he worked on that, and it's like, yeah, they worked. Step by step, you do this, and it works. He had to write another one called Art and Practice of the Occult, on practice of clairvoyance, on practice of creative visualization. These are all great groundwork. Even the creative visualization was, I found it far more practical than many other later books which try and tell you about visualization and law of attraction and so on. He laid out simple laws that made it work. So it was a good starting point. So yeah, I do find his books very, very practical and worth looking them up.
Thank you. It feels a bit weird to ask for things that may infringe on the free will of others. How does that work exactly? I always start any healing work asking to connect with the higher selves of all and only for everyone's highest good. Me too. Does that help? I should just focus on my own issues, but that feels a bit hard now with all this collective trauma going on.
The thing is, they're related. Remember, everything around you is also reflecting you. This is how your shadow works. Everything expressing your buttons out there is also part of your process. When you change yourself, you do change the other person. This is what I've been explaining earlier on in the course, that you know, you don't try to change others, but you do change them by changing yourself. You realize we're all related. We are connected. We hold this state of unconditional love and appreciation. You know, they're all God. You're already changing them. They will all have impact on each other, whether you like it or not. Even the person sitting next to you who's not doing anything, your very presence, your thoughts about them are impacting them, having an effect on them. So we can't run away from this fact that we are changing people. What we have to do is make sure our impact is positive, because that also is a reflection of who you are. What kind of person are you if you have a negative impact on people? That doesn't mean we're interfering with their free will, because so much in the environment is already changing them anyway. If our input is something positive, they're changing in a positive way, that's great, that's life. We don't try everything away and say, no, we mustn't interfere with the true will. There's absolutely nothing around them that can make them grow what they're going to be like. Fact is, we are responding to input from others all the time.
Yeah.
So we don't try to change the person. We don't judge them. We don't control them. We don't manipulate them. But in our attitude and the way we work, we change them. When you love somebody,
wonderful,
they change. Oh. Unconditional love is saying, it's not saying you have to change. It's not saying I love you as you are, therefore don't change. It's saying I love you as you are, but through my love, you'll become more. That's the difference.
Thank you. And you were talking about Ophiel before. Could you just state the name of the book that you were talking about? Was it one or are there many?
The number, they're all Art and Practice series. There's Art and Practice of Astral Projection, Art and Practice of Visualization, Art and Practice of the Occult, Art and Practice of Clairvoyance. There's a series of them.
Practice of Astral Projection was the first one I heard, yeah? So if they Googled that, then the others would come up, yeah. Right?
That's what somebody was asking about, so that's what
they're talking about. Yeah, okay, wonderful. Thank you very much for that. All right, let's go down to the next question that was submitted. Relative to discreating and also visualizing my new goals, have I just asked this one? Mm-hmm. I've asked that one, right, yeah. Okay, let's move down to the next one. Right. No, it's right. I've already asked it about the goals. Right, let's go on to the next question from me. No, it wasn't from me, sorry. As in, I'm going to ask the next question. More guidance, please. On the amount and regularity of taking Thuja for fear and COVID and Mimosa pubica for pain and paralysis. Pudica, not pubica, pudica.
Mimosa. Mimosa actually makes you more sensitive. We don't take it for pain. You take it and feel the pain more.
Can you repeat that? You cut out. Sorry. So you don't take it for pain. You take it for what?
It doesn't stop pain. It makes you more sensitive so you can feel the pain more. That way it helps your process, because if you're numbing out, you take that so you can feel more. Then when you do your point holding, you go further. You're not working with suppression here. You know, so things need to come out. You activate the nervous system so you can feel.
Thanks.
See, none of the work we're doing is repressive in nature. It's about bringing everything up and welcoming it and realizing you're a creator. Everything we're healing, we're doing by going to the cause. There's emotions, there's beliefs and experiences stuck in there. When you release those, you heal. We use things that help that process, not suppress it. That's the difference between natural medicine and kind of a pharmaceutical drugs. They're all made to suppress things. Natural medicine doesn't. It puts you in a natural cycle of healing. It doesn't suppress things.
Thank you. And Andrea submitted a question in the chat today, actually, so related. So let's go on to that one. In the script, in the manual, you're talking about assisting herbs, for example, ginseng and mullein for apathy, etc. Mm-hmm. Can you please elaborate a little on what form of taking and what dose you recommend?
Mm-hmm. Well, none of these herbs are dangerous, so you can't overdose on them. They're simple food herbs you can eat and with no side effects, no harm, but they will work on certain glands. They have the right nutrients to activate each gland. So we say when you take ginseng, gotukola and damiana, they boost the gonads, which means you're going to get through that stuff faster, you release your unconsciousness faster. We take mullein, it helps the spleen, therefore you're going to get through the apathy faster, helps it cleanse as you go through your process. It just aids it. So you can take whatever dose, you know, you recommend in the packet, as it were. You can eat the plant whole, you can take tinctures, you can take capsules, whatever form it comes in.
Great. Thank you. I hope that's answered your question, Andreas. If you need any more, let me know. In creating a simpler life where enchantment is seen and enjoyed, how do we ensure it is not the primitive life which you say should be avoided?
Oh, no, I never said avoid anything. There's a difference between choice and avoidance. You see, if there really was a better than, there wouldn't be a choice, would there? Simple example, if I only give you a choice between pain, hate, suffering, apathy, and love, what are you going to choose? That's no choice at all, is it? It's obvious. Now, if I say, okay, joy, happiness, ecstasy, power, now you've got a choice to make. One of them isn't right, and the other's wrong, but you have choice. In the end, you may have more, but you might want to focus on one now to start you off with. And this depends on your own type of motivation, who you are. Some things attract you more than others. In the end, you get it all, but it's something which draws you now. So what will happen then if you were the kind of person who wants to expand? It's quite natural when you're doing this work because you're learning to welcome everything and therefore expand. When you go to more primitive, it's because you're closing down and don't want to deal with reality. You fall to a primitive state because you go to basic survival mechanisms as a way to get through the crisis. That won't happen if you're welcoming. That's what happens when you're in this place of avoidance, in this place of suppression. I remember a very simple example as a child when I was used to play in the park. There used to be the railway line used to go by the park, and there were like cows in the field there. And I noticed a new calf, for instance, when a train first went by, it would be shaking. And it just shook it out, got the fear out, and after a while, it stopped shaking when the train went by. You just had to feel it. Then I noticed how humans do it. They take something to suppress the pain, suppress, you know, the shaking, whatever it is. They take drugs. Then it is never finished. They don't adapt. They haven't allowed themselves to go through that crisis. Nature is always time putting challenges on you, which we adjust to by breaking down and rebuilding at a higher level. When you suppress things, you don't change. You get sluggish, you go downhill. When you welcome things, you go upwards. It's that simple. Simple choice between up or down, really. And hopefully you're doing this work because you want to expand and you want to heal. Therefore, you're going upwards, becoming more complex rather than primitive because you were ready to welcome things, not run away from them.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I would love to better understand how our healing relates to the astral plane, subconscious and unconscious. Also, how to discern what belongs to us and what does not. Oh, there's a bit more, so I don't know whether I should pause there. Let me read the whole thing and see what you think, Peter. Mm-hmm. So it carries on. What are our shadows versus energies outside of us? There is so much suffering and polarization now in my family and the world, and it would be helpful to know how to help ourselves and others in a way that honors other souls' paths and journeys.
Well, that's what I put in the work, basically. By dealing with ego and shadow, you deal with all this, because there isn't separation between self and others. We're all one, we're all God. We become individuals. It's like I'm a piece of God that's having this experience, you're a piece of God that's having a different experience over there to experience different parts of time and space. The underneath, we're all God. When I change, other people are changing with me. I'm not trying to change them. As I said, it's like the unconditional love base them all up, because I can't deny my impact. I want to see and just do absolutely nothing to make sure I have no impact on anybody. What kind of life is that? If you're powerful, you have more impact. Therefore, it's more concern what the impact is going to be than thinking you're not going to have one. So when in my work, everybody else is changing as well. When I expand, they're expanding. When I deal with my shadow, the people who reflect in that shadow are also changing. All the people come to me, the ones I notice more, the ones who relate to stuff that's inside me. As I go through that stuff, they change. Of course, you're not forcing them to change. They'll deal in their own way, at their own rate. But, you know, this becomes a useful tool. I realize in past relationships sometimes, you might have a relationship with a person who's frustrating you, and when you realize, okay, here's my reflection, if I deal with that, I'm growing. They might grow with me, or you might move on and change the relationship, but there's growth going on somehow. And you realize you only have to get on with your own process and changing other people. Not by trying, not by judging, because it's natural, we are connected. Everybody really wants to grow. See, there's no fun not growing. As I pointed out, fun, the joy, comes in the challenge, expanding yourself. People are not having any growth, they're not having any fun. They try and pretend to have fun by numbing things out and taking alcohol and getting drunk and getting drugs, but it's no fun in the long run, really, is it? They get addicted. They don't really have fun. See, any pleasure that's not built, not expanded into conscious enjoyment, the conscious presence in the enjoyment becomes addiction. Fun is different. It expands us. We don't have addiction. We become more. That bubbles out to change the world around us, and inspires everybody else, they also grow, and everybody's getting better and better. That's evolution. Be here and not have an impact, because that's going to stop evolution. Evolution is natural. The whole world is learning, growing forward. You can't help it, because the experiences teach you something. If I'm going to actually be alive, and therefore be enthusiastic, and take part in life, there's evolution happening. I'm going to inspire everybody else to grow with me. That is natural.
Sorry, I was getting mixed up with my tabs and everything. I was having a giggle saying, oh, I don't know, I used to have quite a bit of fun when I used to drink a lot. Anyway, moving on.
But you even remember it, that's the thing.
Some of it. I used to be told I was having a good time. Anyway, right, and the video suggested so as well. I struggle sometimes with identifying the emotion, and then lots of random memories that seem to be unrelated crop up, making me feel confused. I sit with the not knowing what the emotion is, but sometimes it just stays like that and doesn't change. Any advice, please?
Start with the confusion. If that's the theme that comes up when all these things happen and they're not related, the theme is confusion. There may be something completely different that's going to create that confusion. Now all these jumbled up memories are coming around, but somehow confusion is part of that mix. It's creating it that way. If you welcome confusion, you may find it something a drug you took once, or medication or something, or some overwhelm here. That's, you might get overwhelmed and gave up and you can't put things together anymore. It'll be tiredness. But you know, something creates confusion and then nothing works together. That is a creation itself, the confusion. So what you do is welcome the confusion. It's okay. Just keep observing, welcoming. Realize it's okay to be confused. Watch all these thoughts and coming things that are coming randomly. in the end, you'll see a whole picture that there's a creation here which is full confusion. You may then see many situations leading to that confusion in the end. But right now, you start by feeling confusion and watch all these random thoughts that seem disconnected. Remember, you don't have to make any conclusion about the unknown. You just welcome not knowing, welcome the confusion, and as it passes, you'll expand and see more.
Bye, Joyce. Thank you. She has to go. Thank you very much for your attendance, as always. Thank you. Okay. That was me waving at her, Peter, not stop. Are you finished?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, good. I was waving goodbye to Joyce. Not stop! All right, next question. Yeah. We've got one more that came in on the movie, then we can go over to the questions that have come in via the chat today. So this question is about photographs. I have nasty experiences with one of my sisters. What do I have to do with the photographs that my father took of us, the family photos? They keep reminding me as a kind of hook of the experiences, even if they seem to disappear in my head and my heart.
Okay, the first thing is to use that photo then, because it's a good trigger. If you put the photograph in front of you when you go through your memories, the emotion will be more there. So go then, welcome all the emotion, do the thing of giving back shame and taking back power. When you're finished, then burn the photo, because then you're releasing the past, it's gone. Because the photo, yeah, it does hold something. But before you burn it, finish the emotion. Have the photo in front of you to trigger what it's going to trigger. Do all your work, then burn it. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. All right, bear with me while I just go through all the beginning chat, and then I want to get to the questions starting from today. Hello. Carrie, don't forget to resume recording. Thank you. Okay, a question about nutrition and diet coming from Elizabeth. I would like to know Peter's ideas about eating raw in countries that are just 10 degrees.
Ooh, a bit harder there because you need the extra fat, but you know, you can still get as much raw as you can. You know, like I noticed even places, like when I've been in cold places and when we've been in winter and so on, you know, they always got things like cabbage, you know. The salads are a bit boring because people don't pay enough attention to them, but it's available. You have a blend. Quite often you need some fat in order to actually have extra calories to produce heat, but actually what happens is if you are on raw, your body's more efficient. I've been there myself while running course in a cold place. Everybody else was all wrapped up and I was just in this shirt and thin jumper. Yeah, I was the one who was warm and they weren't, and I was on raw food. So because when you're on raw food, you've got the enzymes, your body's more efficient. It'll regulate itself better. So a lot of what we hear diet is actually illusory. The raw food, you know, it'll give you all the nutrients you need. Well, obviously it needs to be organic as well, because if it's grown in deficient soil, you're not going to have all the minerals you need. But generally when you're on a good, healthy raw food, your body has everything it needs to maintain itself. But sometimes, yes, you might want some extra fat as well, but that can be raw as well. But things like coconuts provide lots of natural fat, which is really, and gives you everything you need. Heavy fats like, you know, from meat and stuff are not the best. They make you heavy, they slow you down, even though they're not.
What fats did you say were heavy? I didn't hear you.
For meat.
Oh, meat, right,
like
okay.
With lard and drippings and things and all the meat.
Yeah.
Heavy
meat,
people often having cold places. But actually, it's different when it's for Eskimos, for instance, raw meat and raw fish. The animals, too, have lots of enzymes when they're raw. The thing about, you know, there it's cold, so it's not going to go off so easily. Like they have what we call the high meat, so the high fish, they bury in the tundra till it goes green. Then they eat that, and it's one of the most healthiest things for them, because you've got lots enzymes. So you know, even then it's raw, it's the cooked food that starts messing it all up. It's not the fact that it's meat or something else, it's like, you know, even the meat, if it's going to be eaten naturally, should be raw. See, meat contains an enzyme called cathepsin that's produced when the animal is running away, produces muscle activity, same as produced in the stomach. So we consider the main enzyme in the stomach to be pepsin. That's actually works on a much higher acidity, lower pH of about 2. Now, human beings tend to have that because we eat so much junk. Most animals don't need so much junk, don't need so much acidity in their stomach. At a pH of about 3 to 4, they produce an enzyme called cathepsin. That's exactly the same as what's produced in the muscles, when you're running away. So the predator runs after you, time by time it's caught the animal and it's eating it. That meat is already full of cathepsin. It's digesting itself. It starts a digestive process, you see. So eating raw animals too is part, you know, is part of that natural process. We've got so unnatural, you know, and I'm not suggesting you go around and catch animals to eat them. You can if you want to, but you know, you might not want to. But it should just explain how we've become so unnatural in the way we do things. That raw food, whether it's meat or vegetable, has enzymes.
Thank you. Sue is asking, I have great trouble defining what it is that I want to create and projections like that. Is this the unknowns coming in as interference in this context too?
Quite often, if you don't know what you want, is because apathy is set in. You might need to. It's good to start writing the lists of what you enjoy, and you know, it might take attention at first, because quite often you lose your goals and lose your dreams, you don't have much desire. There's many reasons why you lose desire, but basically it boils down to apathy. You're not feeling your desire anymore. So as you release the apathy, you start desiring again. When you release all the things what you couldn't, all the beliefs that you can't have something, you know, you have desire again. Quite often we give up desires because we can't have something. Desire something and not have it is frustrating. So you're going to give up to the desire. As we kind of clear the apathy and come back to realize we're a creator, we start to desire things again. This should be natural. If you're struggling with it, then just carry on the healing, welcome all the apathy and all the thoughts of you not being able to have something, all the things that have denied you something, all the crushing of your spirit, all the things that have dumped on you. As you release that, you'll desire things quite naturally because you'll be alive.
Yeah, my fear last week when I wrote my list and I could only get to 15. Oh no, I'm going facing oblivion. All right. Welcome that. Claire is asking about the cultivating and weeding audio. Could you please give an example as she gets stuck on providing info? Oh, here we go. No, I get stuck on exactly the same thing, Claire. Could you please provide an example, because she gets stuck on providing information for intention, action, image, and luminous intent.
Okay. I did think I gave an example on the course somewhere, but which is a simple one, basically about relationships. You know, if I'm in a situation, say, having trouble with my partner, I might want to think, well, what do I want to do about it? And the first thing I notice is, where's my attention? Is it on the good stuff or the bad stuff? See, what I'm putting my attention on is what's going to grow. That's the attention part. What's my mind on? Intention is, why do I want to make that grow? Now, at first you don't know that. You're putting him up all the kinds of other excuses to your attention, saying, no, I really want to make it better. But then your action is what gives that away. But if I actually start doing nice things and communicating and making it better, then I'm showing I want to improve things, and it would improve. If I try to focus on the positives, they grow, I'm improving it. If I say go away and sulk, I'm showing my intention is to be alone. Then the image is what this says to the world about who I am. There are clues. You see, there's the intention, and there's the attention is on the negative. The intention is to be alone. So the action is to go away and be alone, which fits the intention. And the images are the clues. That's showing what I'm creating now. Because I'm with clues, I'm going to focus on the negative and end up being alone. Then if I want to go through the layers, I'm going to ask myself, okay, I've got the intention now to be alone. There's nothing wrong with that, really, if you want to go into why you want to be alone. Because as you go through the layers, remember, intentions get convoluted. Some underneath all that is a positive one. And some, if you go deep enough, I'll get right into my true will, what I'm really here, or what my life is all about, why I'm here. Might think, okay, well, I'll be alone because I need more time to discover myself. I want to wake up. I might go to the deep and then, well, why do I want to wake up? Because I want to be more alive, maybe. I want to find my power. Why do I want to find my power? Maybe because I want to create more love. You see, I've gone through the layers then and realized, actually, underneath, I want love. When I realize that, and now a new image to come from this luminous intent, then I'll be a seeker of love on the big clues. That'll change how I do things. Once I've found that intention, go to the layers and realize actually underneath I want love, it's going to change how I deal with this, my partner. I'll do things that increase the love rather than make me go away and be alone. So you can see how the convoluted layers can lead you to completely opposite of what you started out to do. That's why we do the self-reflection. Mm-hmm. So there's four clues, just quite a bit of thought. But remember, the intention is given away by the action. What do you do when you're focused on that negative situation? Even doing nothing is an action. If you say doing nothing, what's the image goes with that? You know, a numpty layabout, whatever, you know. Somebody who's given up, you know, there's going to be an image somehow linked to the action. So the first thing you observe is attention. What your mind is on is what's going to grow. You go to the action. What do you do when you focus on that? That'll tell you the intention and the image. So it's good to actually then jump from attention to action to see what your intention is.
Yeah, Claire. I mean,
We'll give you an example of what you want to change, and I'll talk you through it.
Sorry, what was that? Say that again, please, Peter.
Think of something you'd like to change. We'll give you an example. What do you want to change, and I'll talk you through it.
I want... oh, gosh, put on the spot. What do I want to change? I want to change... the one that keeps coming to my head, tell me if this is relevant or not, my weight.
Okay. So where's your attention?
Where's my attention?
So when you're looking at this whole thing about your weight, where's your attention?
Yeah. On my belly.
Yeah, what do you focus on?
And my bum and my legs. I focus on my image that I see in the mirror.
Do you feel fat? Do you feel ugly? What's the
I feel...
Okay, now what's this image?
I feel useless that for I don't know how many years I've been trying to get the body that I'm happy and proud of. I feel failure. There we go. I feel ugly and failure. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you do?
Eat. go to the gym. I go to the gym a lot.
When you look at the fat.
What do I do? Mm-hmm. I bully myself. I condemn myself. I hide myself under baggy clothes. I might say, oh, well, I'm fat anyway, so you might as well eat the cake. And I also go to the gym a lot to try and compensate for that.
Okay. So here's the thing then. The image is fat. It's become the image. That becomes really obvious then. It's like, you know, many images, but the image is fat. It always keeps coming back. Then you focus on the fat. You look at it.
Yeah.
Your intention then is, although you want to change it all, you've got to... creation. Go back to dual creation, you see. I'm fat, I want to be skinny. So fat will keep coming up again. This we have, might have to go through this dual creation, then go through the layer. You feel it. You don't know why you eat the cake. All those things. You go through the layers of the unknown until you get to this duality. Fat, healthy and fit and sexy. And when you actually see, the more you feel fat, the more you want to be slim and sexy. It aggravates it. You've got dual creation. When you discreate that duality, then there's no more pressure. You can simply be sex as you want, and you won't feel fat anymore. But there's an image there, you see. So even before doing that self-reflection, you might want to do the discreation of the dual creation.
I'm welcoming the confusion.
Yeah, good. this is a bit different, because in this situation, it's not so easy to see an intention. Because your intention is to be slim, obviously, and that makes you go to the gym, and that's good.
Yeah.
What's holding it back is the dual creation.
Right.
The image that you says you have that.
Okay.
So you're recreating that, even though you're trying to be slim.
Okay. So this isn't a good example. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you go to the layers before the meditation. You do the analysis, attention, intention, action, image. And if you realise there's a duality going, okay, let's go and discreate that one.
Okay. Yeah, well, we've known for many months that this process I'm not too hot on myself. There's something blocking that. Do you want to choose a different example or do you want to go to the next question?
It's always because there's something uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Go on to another question.
Okay. Let's move on from my fat ass. All right, moving on. So from Corinne, what is behind all the layers of emotions once you worked through them? Is it the blueprint of yourself? And if so, what exactly is the blueprint?
truth is, emotions never stop. They just get higher and higher and higher. Even when you get to love, you release that and there's even higher love. It never stops. Because yes, you do get close to your blue being because your true nature is love. It's that love and joy and ecstasy and the touching and unfathomable. That's the real you. So yes, you do go back to the blind blueprint as you do it. But it doesn't actually stop. You don't get to a point where it stops. Whatever you release, you go even more. There's no ceiling on love. You get a greater and greater and greater love and ecstasy. So even if you welcome love and let it go, you have more love afterwards. So this welcoming doesn't stop. That's what it is to go through life enthusiastically.
Yeah. Question from me, actually. Can you explain more about how to grok something or someone? What would that look like or feel like? What is the process? I mean, how do you do this?
Okay, it's simply about putting yourself in its position and imagining. I'll use the example of a simple object first for the person, like this little table in front of me. If I put the table, I'm going to feel what it's like to be a table. I feel flat, so I can feel the legs, feel where my feet left the ground. I can feel what's on top of me and just being the table. See, it's easier with an object. I start with a person, like I might grok you, for instance. Okay, I'll first do it physically. I'll imagine what it's like being you. I'll become a woman suddenly. I've got hair, got all this going on. And I can then look at your expression, start feeling what you're feeling. And that's, I'm simply using my imagination to step into your shoes. That's what grokking is. Now, this is a very useful exercise. It's not important at this stage that I can know everything you're thinking. That's not what grokking is about. It's about letting go of identity. I think this is me, this identity. Actually, it's not. I can be anything else. If I stop being me and be this table for a minute, then be you and then be the tree over there, I'm not being fixed about anything. Therefore, if I can release my identities easily. If I have this identity of, say, of being fat, what you had, if I'd forgot something else, I realized, no, that's not, it's just another creation I can be in. No, so it's not me. This is what I'm choosing to be at this moment. Right now, I'm actually grokking myself. This isn't real either. I can just as well be you as I can be me.
Wow, yeah.
I'm more kind of familiar with being me. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes so much sense. Thank you. I think I've asked this one. I keep focusing on my idea. Yep, I asked that one. We answered that one. Yep. Okay. No, that's just a comment. Bear with me, Peter. I'm just scrolling through. Thanks, everyone. Keep your comments coming in. If you want to ask any more questions, what to do with the photographs? No, Corinne, we've asked that one for you already. That's from Joyce. Yes, wonderful question from Claire. While she's doing the Chandali and shield chanting, is there a reason why her cat loves it? She keeps coming, running over to her and starts purring or lies on her chest while she's doing it.
Cats love energy. Of course, they come and lap it up. They're very sensitive to energy. Funny thing is, they can also come to negative energy because they like to transmute it. But the positive energy I fit really well with, because cats are high energy beings. That's why they're good at transmuting things. Now that's why I come and cuddle up, you stop purring, you feel good because it's like they're transmuting energy. But if there's good energy, they'll be right there as well and can share it. I love it.
Yeah, they do. I had your cat on my lap all night the other night. Yeah, wonderful. Question from Lulu. We can do yoga in a meditative mindset. Does make sense or beneficial to add mantras or chandali into daily yoga practice? And if it does, what mantras are best for it?
There aren't really better mantras than others. It all depends on what you feel closest to. You look at most mantras are linked to a certain deity. So obviously the first thing you figure out is what deity you feel most connected to, what comes to you, what feels like your way home, what feels like this is image of the creator that takes me to, I can see it, everything. Which does it for you? If you're really thinking about your deity, then when you're actually using the mantra of that deity, you're feeling oneness with it, and that's what's taking you there. So it's really about finding the mantra that suits you. There isn't really one that's more than others. Chandali is different, obviously, because each level, we go up to higher levels, there's different mantras for it. So at the moment, use the mantras for level 2 Chandali, if you've got there, and because that'll help raise the Kundalini and get the fire going. But yeah, you can use other mantras too in the same way, and you can multitask. Like you might activate the Chandali at first by using the mantra there, and while you meditate, do another mantra as well. Change the mantra, and then you'll find yourself, you know, going further wherever you're going.
Yeah. Since your thing about doing the Chandali for half an hour, I do it as soon as I wake up now, and I don't stop chanting the Chandali mantra until I'm showered, dressed, coffee made, journal in front of me. It's going constantly, and then I do something else. Okay. Wonderful. Thank you.
It happens with mantras. They become familiar, and they're searching for the relaxed state. So almost work automatically as you're relaxing and take you back to relaxation, keep you in that space, you know, becomes automatic, it takes you there all the time, but it comes automatically and repeats itself, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And if ever I know I need an afternoon snooze, I'm straight on the mantras, out like a light. Okay, right, June, your question. Mm-hmm. If you take back your power which someone else might not want to release, might want to hang on to and have the power over you, or if you fight black magic, as you referred to last time, don't you judge then and do something the other person won't see as loving and accepting?
There's a difference between a judgment and a choice. You see, I can have preferences. I don't want to be suffering and powerless and being blocked with black magic. It doesn't mean I'm judging another person, but I'm not going to let them do it to me. Now, we've got to realize also judgment isn't wrong. That's a judgment itself, isn't it? First of all, let's look at why we don't judge. See, it's far more adult to actually look at the effect of something so you can decide if you want that effect rather than actually make absolutes. Because that's what a judgment is, making absolute where there's no change. There's two basic reasons we judge. First of all, judgment hurts people. When I'm making judgments on you, it's hurtful. That's why I don't want to do it when we're healing. If I'm not healing, and I don't like you, then I'll make judgments. Nothing wrong with that. I'm not healing at that moment. But also, judgments stop things in place, stop them changing. So you might be having a discussion, for instance, and I'm starting to make an absolute. There's no more communication. I've closed it down because I've had enough. That's a choice too. But obviously, in our healing process, you don't do that because we stop growing. So there's two reasons we don't judge in healing. We don't want to hurt them. We don't want to freeze the process. That's why we don't judge. Not because it's bad or wrong. If I say judgment is wrong, I'm making a judgment. You don't stop judgment by judging it. That's just ridiculous. So, first of all, don't be afraid of judgment. You don't do it while you're healing. If you've got an issue about judging, then go out and do some judging to get out of the system. There's nothing wrong with it if you're not actually growing at that moment. So let's not make this judgment. You see, people are trying to think judgment is bad and therefore you don't do it. That's not what's going to help. You choose where you want to go and use the things that get you there and don't do things that block it. That's common sense. That's intelligence. There are times we don't judge because we're healing. But if somebody is then attacking me and I'm saying, no, I mustn't stop them because I'm judging them, well, I can judge them. I don't like them. I don't like somebody attacking me. Why shouldn't I judge them? I'm not healing them at that moment, so why shouldn't I judge? Now, that's different from when I go in my shadow and realize, okay, they will reflect me somehow. Judging them doesn't help because I won't look at my own stuff. When I start looking at what they're reflecting in me and go through my process and deal with shadow, that's very useful. So at that moment, it's good to not judge. But stopping them from harming me is not judging. I might say it's what they're doing is wrong. Yes, to me it is, because I don't want that in my reality, and I have choice. But I'm not really judging them in the end, because I'll actually look at what they're reflecting to me. I'll give you an example. What I've noticed in many of these cases with people dealing with black magic that the light worker doesn't is this self-advancement. Now, imbalance becomes selfishness. To look after number one, the light workers often put everybody else first. So you're struggling for survival, which is going to win. The one who looks after number one, you're getting trashed. So we look at this, we don't see it as a negative or positive, we bring it into balance. We don't want to be selfish, but we want to take back that self-advancement, know how to look after number one as well as everybody else. See what I'm getting here? If I heal that in my shadow, then it's like they're not able to harm me anymore. I've embraced my shadow, then I'll be in a strong position. I'm still not going to let them to harm me. I'll still do what I need to do to beat them, but it's no longer judgmental. I see that I'm unbalanced, but one second, the root of what I'm resisting here, and I own it in myself and use it properly.
Peter, I'm going to ask you to move your shirt away from your microphone. It's rubbing. Thank you. And then just to let you know, we are nearly 20 past six. We've only got a few more minutes left. So I'm going to go directly to the content related questions that we have left. So if your question that is unrelated to the content, i.e. the COVID vaccinations, etc., if you would like to email those into Peter, maybe it's something he might add to his next Q&A, or maybe he will directly answer them to you. I just want to make sure that we dedicate this time to the ultimate healing content. Thank you very much. And I'm sorry that we didn't have time to cover all of them. But we're going to go to Tammy's question now. So back to Carrie's example of dealing with the image of being fat. I should discreate this image by welcoming it until it goes away. Is that right?
Yes, that's a starting point. But remember, other things can come into the picture when you start welcoming. There can be other emotions behind this when you've been judged. So yes, that's the first thing. Feel how you feel about being fat. Go to other part times you've been judged for being fat, or just something else totally unrelated in it, even, it produces a similar feeling. So if you start welcoming it, you might go through other layers as well. You don't know till you get there. So I'm saying, don't figure it out in your head, just keep welcoming. You will go through layers, even if there are unknowns on the way. But yeah, start with that, how you feel about being fat.
Okay. Wonderful. And okay, so yeah, the last questions that we do have really are actually around the vaccine. So let's go towards that. Oh, and smart TVs. But let's go to the vaccine. So basically, people are asking for your advice because we've got some teachers in here. No one's allowed to fly unless they have the vaccine, blah, 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 blah. Peter, what is your advice, please, on this COVID vaccine?
Discreate it. That fixed. Not all airlines are saying you can't fly without vaccine. Others saying, no, we're not going to have this. We're going to let you fly anyway. Just be.
Sorry, Peter, you cut out.
Airlines that will allow you.
You cut out. Can you start that again?
There are airlines that will let you fly without vaccine. I say, first of all, it's not that fixed. There are airlines that will let you fly without vaccine. Not all airlines are agreeing to this. So you simply look further. There's always another way. Don't accept what you're being shown. You discreate that whole situation because, you know, there's emotions involved around this, but your lack of freedom, all these things being heaped upon you, that being poisoned and all those things. Go and discreate that, and then you'll find it's easy to create an alternative. It doesn't have to restrict you. You can fly. That's the truth. That, for instance, which one was it? That Irish one, Ryan. There, they've straight away said, no, we're not having this, like, you can fuck off. Aeroflot, allowing people, they're simply separating people, vaccinated people go that side, unvaccinated go that side, then no argument. No, they're all having their own ways. That's the thing, people will have solutions. This is what you've got to focus on, that you're not alone here. People try to find solutions. So first of all, discreate all the negativity we're getting into it, and then realize there's alternatives. You don't have to have the vaccine. I can't force you. There's many, it's not fixed yet. Although the government's always trying to put more of this crap in place, there's plenty of opposition. Even the Supreme Justice of the High Court has said that what the government does is illegal. You've got many doctors. So you've got the Barrington Collective. There's over 1,000 doctors and the medical scientists who are standing up saying this is all bullshit. There's plenty on your side. Again, it looks at self-reflection. Are you focusing on the negative or the positive? What do you want to grow? Let's start feeding these ones which are actually making positive steps forward towards our freedom and our, you know, bring back our sovereignty. They're out there. So stop listening to the media, which gives you all the crap. Media's part of the control. Look around, do your research. There's the Barrington Collective. Look it up. So do your research. There's plenty out there that's really positive when you look.
Did you say Barrington?
I believe it was Barrington, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, okay. Okay. And Anna wants to know, can you just create any negatives within the vaccine, for example?
You probably can. So then if you look at some of the empowerments out there, especially still that, like things like the black goo empowerment and the kind of 72,000 ideas and higher self-collection, and these are all things to overcome the negative effects. But there's a lot there that's a problem. This is a very nasty vaccine. Because it's nothing to do with COVID, really. How can they make a vaccine against a virus they haven't even isolated? This is the fanvax. It's there to shut you down, to cure what they call religious fanaticism. Because when you're being all religious, they can't control you so easily. It's going to shut you down, close everything off, so you become obedient. Machines. It contains nanotechnology in the form of aluminium particles put into the lipid system. It has the stuff that affects the DNA to shut down the part of the brain which lights up when you have religious experience. So naturally, when you take this vaccine, you're going to be shut down, basically closed off from God. So the way forward then is to do these empowerments, where you can put in the higher self-connection disc, the Nadia activation to actually reactivate everything. It's quite a bit of work, so it's best not to have the vaccine. But you know, there's many ways you can avoid it. You can discredit this whole thing and focus on the positive and link into those who are creating that positive.
Yeah, I mean, Karen is asking, there are many different vaccines, so are they all bad? I mean, well, yeah. Right, they're all bad.
In general, yes, but the latest COVID vaccine, there's only a couple of companies making it, is the Fanvax. This is far worse than any vaccine. And induce nanotechnology to create a kind of an AI human interface. You can have nanotechnology in you, so you can be controlled. They can link into your feelings, your thoughts, everything. This is not really a vaccine against the virus.
Yeah, you did cut off a little bit there, Peter. So I'm wondering, we've only got 5 minutes left, and I really want you to announce. Oh, go on.
So you cut off there again.
It's gone again. Yeah, you cut off again. Yeah. I'm going to advise that you write something in the MeWe group about the vaccines, if that's okay, so that everyone can get that information. That would be really good.
Study at the moment.
Yeah, okay. So on behalf of Peter, because he keeps cutting out, I am going to let you all know that next Sunday, Peter is going to be holding a very quick webinar for all of you people, wonderful ultimate healers, to discuss the logistics and the possibility of us all doing online point holding. So what we want to be able to do is we want to be able to offer point holding without you people having to travel here to Thailand, because obviously at the moment that's not possible. But we still want you to have the point holding experience, the physical point holding experience. It's possible. We can do this, but it's going to take quite a bit of logistical organization. And the first thing we need to know is, are you interested? Do you want to do it? Is this a possibility for you? So in order for you to understand more about how this would work, what it would look like, and if this is a possibility for you, Peter's going to hold a very quick call next Sunday to describe the logistics of it, the structure, how it would work, and what you would need to do, so that you are then in a much more informed position to be able to let us know if this is of interest to you and if this is something we should go ahead and actually organise for you. We've got a yes, 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 please. Okay, wonderful. So the quick webinar.
That's what you could start.
Yeah, obviously we will put the information about this webinar in the MeWe group, but it's going to be next Sunday, 10 a.m. UK time, very, very quick. As I said, just to describe the logistics so that you can give us your indication as to whether it's possible and when. Okay, so more information about that to come. Sorry, Peter, you've gone, so I thought I'd announce it on your behalf.
I'm here anyway, it's fine, yes, fine. But yeah. Anyway, realise that it can be done, organised in a very small group, so it doesn't require everybody to be on board right now. This is all through in your own time. If anybody can want to do this point holding from a distance, it only requires people to get together in very small groups. And I can guide you through Zoom in exactly what you're doing in pressing points and show you where to go and guide you through it. So it can be done in small groups this way. It only requires you to meet with somebody else, two or three people maybe, you know, if you can. If you can meet up because you're somebody close to you, we can get you in a little point holding group and guide you from a distance. So that's what we're going to be discussing and the logistics of to get it organised.
Yeah, thank you. And yes, it's next Sunday, Sunday 17th. I'll put the details in the MeWe group so that we have maximum chance of everybody coming along so that you can ask your questions, so that you've got full understanding, and then you can let us know. And as Peter said, you don't need to be ready straight away, just if this is something that you would like to do in the future. Okay, anything else from you, Peter, before we close off?
No, we're all done for now, I think. That's all great. But as I said, if anybody has any more questions, just write them down in the MeWe group. I'll carry on answering there until we speak again.
Yeah, wonderful. I think a little bit more elaboration on the vaccine thing would be wonderful for everybody as well, because you did keep cutting out. It's quite difficult to understand you. Okay.
Well, first of all, I just want to point out with the vaccine, yes, you can discreate it. But denying does not help. You have to realize that there is something pretty potential horrible there. Welcome the feelings, and then you can discreate it. Denying it is going to suppress things and not deal with it. So don't shut off from what a threat it is. There are threats to your freedom and everything else all the time. Ignoring them and turning your back and burying your head isn't going to help. You have to discreate, which means dealing with your feelings about it. Okay? So let's look at the vaccine very squarely. First of all, why would you take a vaccine anyway? That's already fear-based. You know, if somebody's telling you to take a vaccine, you don't need it, why would you? So I'll deal with that first. And then if somebody's threatening you to poison you in some way, go with those feelings. Everything can be discreated, but it doesn't happen by burying your head in the sand. Okay.
Yes, thank you. And so just a reminder to everybody, if your question didn't get answered today, whether it was content related or not, please put it in the MeWe group. I know there was a couple of questions that I had to miss out because of time. Please put them in the MeWe group. Look out for the announcement for the webinar next Sunday. It's going to be a quick one. And just keep doing what you're doing. Welcome everything. Do the learning. Share your experiences, ask your questions in MeWe, keep that community feeling alive, and we will announce soon when the next webinar is going to be as part of the live series, which will be at the beginning of February. Date to be confirmed ASAP. Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much, everybody, and have a wonderful weekend wherever you are, and we'll speak to you all very, very soon. Bye-bye, everyone.
Okay, bye. See you soon. Mm-hmm.